management. I didn't really have time to leave because I, at the time, had 8 animals.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, my YouTube house is about to endure a historical hurricane, and I'm about to be in here in this YouTube house.
Welcome to the Life on the Upcycle podcast. I'm Ashley Titus, a coffee-obsessed, cloth-diaper-loving working mother with a master's degree in environmental management. Each week, I'll be bringing you interviews from experts with tools to help your busy family live a more eco-friendly, centered life. In a world that's constantly demanding you to show up, you won't have to worry about that here. I'll do the heavy lifting. So relax and enjoy. And together, let's love Earth Day, because she's the only one we've got. This is episode number 9. Thank you so much for joining me today. In the midst of all the uncertainty and stress that COVID-19 has brought to all of us in one form or another, I wanted to provide everyone with a non-COVID-related story of hope and courage. Before we dive in completely, I want to talk for a little bit about tiny homes. I know that's super random and off topic, but tiny homes initially trend that is turned into a growing movement. And the environmental impact is pretty impressive. For starters, these tiny homes require less initial building materials. According to the U.S. Census in 2018, the median floor area of a new single-family home was 2,386 square feet. A tiny home ranges from 100 to 400 square feet. Simply put, tiny homes equate to a tinier carbon footprint. Which makes sense, right? A tiny home is going to have less light fixtures. They will require less heating or cooling. They also use less water. And it requires a creative, minimalistic approach to living comfortably in a smaller space. Now, tiny homes might not be for you, and that's okay. I just hope that you're open to hearing a story from today's guest, Toya Stone. Her and her husband built their tiny home based off of the self-taught knowledge they learned from YouTube videos. Luckily, YouTube served them well because their home actually survived Hurricane Harvey. Toya shares both of those captivating stories in today's episode. Additionally, she was so kind to share her key chapter of her life, their inspirational adoption story. Today's episode is a break for our norm, but I think that we could definitely all use a little distraction and hope. Toya is an amazing person. She spent 13 years in homeless ministry. She is an incredible mother and wife. She mentors her local youth. She has an incredible ministry called Hi There Love. You can find it on Facebook. Within that platform, she shares just stories of hope and joy. I know you are going to love her just as much as I do. Here's Toya. Thank you, Toya, so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate it, especially your commitment. It's 7 a.m. We're both mothers, and I know this was the best time for both of us this morning, and thank you so much. I appreciate that more than you will ever know.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Would you mind telling the listeners just a little bit about yourself, your passions, and journey with Hi There Love?
Absolutely. A little bit about myself. I always struggle with this part. A little bit about me. Well, I am going to be 34 soon. I have a handsome 2-year-old, and I've been married for almost 11 years. We live out here in the country, built the house that we live in, our tiny little home, before we knew that we were going to have children. So it got smaller. You know, I just love people. I love to be outside. I love encouragement, love seeing dreams happen. I would have to say that's probably what inspires me in everything that I do. It's not necessarily about what I'm doing. It's just about, I guess, using what I'm doing to bring hope and inspiration to others. There's just something about seeing people push away that fear and just chase after what it is that they're passionate about, and just seeing them get on that stage wherever they need to get up on stage in life, and just seeing them show up and that courage that it takes. So that really inspires everything that I do. I love to write. I have one published book, and I'm on my way to hopefully publishing my first children's book. So that's very exciting.
That's really exciting. The pictures are gorgeous, what you've shared so far.
Thank you. I just wanted a way to share one of the greatest testaments of my life. And I never thought it would be a children's book. But God has a funny way of helping us realize things we may not have thought was ever possible. So we just kind of go with flow. And when I'm not just being there for the people, I am neck deep in the rescue world of all things animals, from dog rescue to Gulf Coast Wildlife Rescue, where I'm a permitted wildlife rehabilitator. So yeah, I don't know how to sit still, basically.
You and me both. I know. I think that's probably like one of my biggest faults is not being able to rest.
Yes. So, yep. I'm foreign.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, where can everyone find you?
So online, everyone can definitely find me on Facebook, and my tag name is Hi There Love Stone, or my email, which is tparkman.stone@gmail.com.
You have a really cool thing that you do on Hi There Love. You have Devo and Brew.
Yeah, it really came from a place of ministry. I was in homeless ministry for about 8 years. And like I said before, I didn't know how to sit still. Being busy allowed me to feel valued and enough, because those are one of my insecurities that I struggle with. So when God called me out of my 8-year homeless ministry, I really felt lost. And I really struggled because I wasn't busy. I wasn't doing something that I felt was great. And it was sort of in that season that I had to realize who I'm doing ministry for in the first place, and that's God, and that my own personal insecurities were becoming greater than God in my world, and I knew that was problematic. So God really took me down and sat with me for a good year, and he had told me that he was going to call me back to the people in a whole different way. So he did. And after we had adopted our son, I felt like God was just calling me to create a Facebook page and to go live every morning, which was really terrifying. I didn't know what to call it. I was just sitting there. Devo and Brew came to mind. I knew that in the mornings was my only free time without David. Thought devotional, and I obsessed with coffee. So Devo and Brew, and I was like, okay, that could work. And I just started getting on, and I had to realize that, you know, yeah, I'm not out in the streets like doing homeless ministry, which just seems like that. Wow, that's so awesome. You're out doing homeless ministry. I had to remind myself that this is where I'm at right now. This is what I'm able to do. And that's totally okay, because God really had to teach me it's more about quality than quantity, and that my value comes from him. And so I've really enjoyed what he's doing there with Devo and Brew.
Wow. I love that story. That resonates with me so much on so many different levels. It's tough when you become a mom and all of a sudden, like, you don't have as much time or energy to put towards things that you did before. And I've totally run up the same walls. I too, though, had a waiting season when we first moved to North Texas, and I couldn't find any jobs that like pertained to my background. Mm-hmm. And so I had found one at a hotel, and I failed miserably at it. And the first job I ever like really was awful at. And then I ended up in a car wreck, and
oh no,
it was crazy. Yeah. And all of a sudden I felt like pulled to be a nanny, which is like so random. Mm-hmm. When you're just talking about, you know, that humbling season, girl, I was there for 3 years, and it was tough. But looking back on it, like, that season was one of my favorites. It was just mm-hmm. so beautiful and quiet. And in some ways I miss it. But then I went back to grad school and did all of the things. And now I'm like back at that period where it's like, okay, you step back, Ashley, you can only do so much, you know?
Yes.
But it's funny that you say, though, not having as big of an impact. I think you're having a lot larger impact than you realize. There's been a couple of mornings that I've watched you, and without fail, my phone will die in the middle of your devotion. And so I will jump on my husband's phone. I think I like set him to where he's following you now too, so I jump on easier. It's really cute. The other day he was, yeah, hey, have you noticed Toya's, she's moving on up in some of her morning watches. So it was kind of funny. It was really cute. But he noticed. I was like, no, I haven't noticed, because I get on when it's live.
Yes. Oh, I love that. I, you know, there's one other couple, well, I should say the wife, now it's the couple, because she would make sure that her husband's iPad was charged so that they could easily hop on because her phone was having difficulties a lot. That's funny. And that really means a lot to me. Thank you for sharing. I love that. So my heart is really in marriage with us leading marriage small groups. So I love that there are married couples out there that are, you know, both kind of being touched by it in their own way, even if it's
absolutely
keeping tabs on my watch numbers.
Yeah.
I love that. That's awesome.
Okay. And you mentioned too that you love coffee, and that's something that we definitely share. So I love watching your videos, and you struggle with your coffee machine sometimes. I'm sure that you don't enjoy that, but it's just so real and authentic.
You're a Devon Brew viewer. I might have used my coffee maker on a daily, and you know, I could really get rid of that thing and get a new one, but my dad bought it for me. It's like the cheapest coffee maker ever, but that's just my dad. My Keurig had actually broken. We were gone on vacation. We came back home and I had this new coffee maker, and it's the most simple, basic coffee maker ever. And my dad's like, yeah, I thought I would take it upon myself to go get you a coffee maker. I could have spent $10 more to get that automatic where it turns on and off. No, just stick to the basic. So every time I punch in my coffee maker, it makes me think of my dad. Dysfunctional as that might sound, but
that's hilarious. Up until recently, honestly, I did Keurig coffee, and I would get the ones that you could recycle the plastic, and it was such a pain. Pull out the grinds and rinse the plastic off. And then also too, like, I really felt this is so wasteful. So I had my husband pull out our percolator from our like camping box, mm-hmm. and I've been using that on our stovetop, and like, I'm pretty sure my husband thinks I'm nuts.
I love
added this extra level to my coffee in the mornings. You know what I mean? Because I have to wait for it.
I love that.
It's kind of cool. I think I heard you say one day that you were drinking the Black Rifle coffee.
Yes, I went to my friend's house. That's what they drink. I was like, wow, this is amazing. But yeah, I've been hooked ever since then.
Yeah.
If I can't drink that, it's that $3.83 can of Folgers from HEB.
Yes.
There is a new coffee. It's called Wide Awake.
Hmm.
And I think I'm just called to it because the packaging are wildlife.
Oh, how cool is that?
Yeah, they're totally cute. The bag has these big eyes, but it belongs to like an owl or some kind of wildlife. Totally cute, right? I've got to get my hands on that.
Yeah, I need to look for that too. I've never even heard of that. That's amazing.
It's fun. I'm sort of a packaging kind of girl. If the packaging looks cute.
I know, I'm a marketer's dream. Same.
Yeah. Yes.
And one of the big reasons too, I asked you to be on this show was to talk about your house. I just adore the story about you and Jason building your house yourself. Would you mind talking about that for a little bit?
Oh, sure. Our house. it makes me laugh. Man, where do I even start with it? Because this house, the process of this is, it means so much to me. It grew us both in so many ways. Well, first and foremost, my husband, and this kind of have to know this about for the story, but my husband is a very simple man. He's very, very simple, and he is straight up country in the hills of Arkansas or the mountains or whatever they have. So he's just simple, and he's always lived in the country. And at the time we had just bought a house and renovated it, and we were living there in town. He had just become a police officer, and he was just really wanting to come home at the end of the day and separate his work from his home life. And it was just really hard to do that in the city because you hear the sirens, and it's just, he just felt like he was just stuck there and he couldn't really separate himself. And so he said, let's buy some land and build a house. And I'm like, we build the house? And he said, yeah. And I'm like, you are crazy. How to build a house? What? And he said, no, we'll figure it out. That's how he is. And I'm like, okay, you know, I've just learned at this point to just trust him and go with the flow. And so we sat down on the couch with, I kid you not, an 8x11 piece of computer paper, a envelope for a straight edge, and a pencil that barely had an eraser on it. And we just drew our home. It was this tiny little box. He said, okay, we've got the blueprints. Let's do it. We wanted to build our home debt-free. We did that with saving. But what really gave us that push was in 2008, Jason's brother Mark was killed in action. We knew that we wanted to honor his life and use that money that we had acquired from that. And we wanted to use that money in a way that would honor Mark. Mm-hmm. And Mark loved the country. We used that money to buy this land. And upon that, we just continued to save. One overtime check bought a window. You know?
Yeah.
And we built our house as quickly as possibly could. When all was said and done, we were completely debt free. We owed nothing. We did it by just budgeting and just being as disciplined as possible. It's a total of 600 square foot, and we have a loft, and up there is about 150. It sits on 20 acres, and it took us almost 3 years to build. I remember there was this one time our whole house was crooked. Okay, back up. Real YouTube, if you're listening, I am being 100% honest. We built our house from YouTube videos. We did
everything. That's amazing.
My husband, before he was a cop, was a licensed plumber. So that part, good on. But everything else came from YouTube videos. And our whole house was crooked. It was shifted. Jason thought, well, we'll just attach the tractor to the house. I'll back up and we'll straighten it out and it'll be okay. And that was not the case. And some tears and cuss words later, we just found ourselves sitting there. And there were so many times we had to pick each other up. You know, we just grew. We spent almost 2 years looking for the perfect place. And we just feel like God brought us here. And it was just 20 acres of Wasatch and ugly mesquite. And it was brown and it was lifeless. And I didn't want nothing to do with this place. He said, hey, mom, come down. Let me show you this place and you can convince Toya. So we came here and my mom was like, baby, she was like, it may look brown and all these ugly trees, but you know what's beautiful about this place? You can make it your own. You can come in here and bring life to this place. So fine. Bought it, and that's how this came to be. And through our story here, we have inspired a few more couples to build their tiny home dreams debt-free. I love how God used that 8x11 piece of paper to inspire many people. By inspiring them, we were also inspired.
That's beautiful. I love that so much.
Yeah.
It's funny, when I was preparing for this, I found some interesting information that I think that you would like. 68% of tiny house owners don't have a mortgage. Okay, so this was in October 2019 is when this report came out. So things have obviously changed a little bit. But homes under 500 square feet are appreciating twice as fast as other homes in the real estate market.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That is interesting.
Yeah. You know, at first, minimalistic living and tiny homes were just a trend, but now it's more of a social movement.
Yes.
And I just love that.
And it's kind of funny because when we decided to build our tiny home, it was right at that time that that trend was starting to gain some traction. It was sort of a thing, but it wasn't a thing yet. It was just coming to life. And after we got settled into our home, I remember a couple of days later, you know, everywhere I would go online, there was like an article or an advertisement for tiny homes. And then there was the TV shows that came out and you just saw this huge movement. And then it slowly trickled into a way for people to really live financially free. Really, it was a helping hand. And it was just real interesting. I am a budget freak to begin with. I just love how the tiny home brings such, how do I say it, like a perspective. It really taught us how less is more.
I love that. And that's on like goes on to so many levels. So as far as like finances go, less is more. But then too, just in general waste, you don't have as much room to bring in. So I'm sure that you have to really think about purchases before you buy them. You know?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. There was always a joke when we were building, my friends would bring us Barbie side stuff. You know, but it's so true. You have to get so creative. We have discovered that we have less trash.
Wow.
Don't use as much electricity or water. And you can't buy lots of plastic because your room is very limited. So you really look for things that you can use over and over and over and over again. And you just start to realize that plastic doesn't last long.
Yeah.
And so you find yourself really reaching on the shelf for more recycled items. You know, I love the cups from recycled material, that some foods are being sold in boxes from recycled material. And you just naturally find yourself reaching for those items. So I love that it influences us and it encourages us to be more mindful of our environment. And then you're not filling your home with unnecessary things. You just learn to live this way that's more organic.
Yeah. And intentional. I love that.
Yes, intentionally. And not just with material things, but with who you are as a person. When you live in tiny spaces, there is no hiding. And you just, I don't know what it is. You just naturally become more transparent. I don't know. It's weird to think how much your environment influences your life, your attitude, the way you think, everything. It's real interesting. That's what I've realized that living out here, how we just become more wholesome. So I don't know. If you can go and live tiny, live tiny.
Yeah, it's one of our dreams, definitely. But my husband, when he thinks, he's a pacer. He'll probably kill me for saying this. But that's my only concern is if we had a tiny house, it'd have to be kind of like one of the shotgun houses, you know?
Yes.
So he could have like a place to pace when he thinks.
Yes. No, I love that. I just build him like a really long hallway. That
there you go.
Extends out from the house. We've honestly been thinking too and looking at those barn dominiums. Like the barn.
Oh, those are really cool. Yeah.
Those have become a thing too now recently. People have been buying them like really small, almost shed space, I guess.
Yeah. So my husband showed me 2 nights ago a Morgan building. He's yeah. like, hey, yeah, I think we could do something like this. And I was like, I think we need something a little bit more firm, you know?
Hi, I'm so sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to make sure that you knew that we were also on social media. You can find us at Facebook and Instagram on Life on the Upcycle. Within Facebook, we have an awesome community group. It'd be awesome if you started a conversation within the community. There, you can post questions, give suggestions for things that you've implemented into your house to help other busy families. And lastly, have you followed this podcast? It would be awesome if you would. That way, you'll get updates on the newest episodes. Let's dive back in.
Hey, okay, so I want to talk to you about, it's been 3 years since Hurricane Harvey, yeah. and I followed y'all the entire time and just worried about y'all. My parents were down there at the same time. Would you mind talking about Hurricane Harvey? And because y'all had already built your house at that point, correct?
Yes, our YouTube house. Our YouTube house.
I love that.
In a historical hurricane. Oh my goodness. That was my huge concern. So in law enforcement, and I know that you have a really good idea about law enforcement because of your husband. So you know, when there is a natural disaster or something of the sorts coming up, you know, he's my husband, but he also basically belongs to the PD. And yep. So I knew that he couldn't be here. And it's crazy. Okay, Hurricane Harvey did not give us much time to prepare. Really just popped up in like a matter of 48 hours. It became an actual threat. It was really fast acting. I knew that Jason was going to have to go to the EOC and he was going to have to stay there. And I wouldn't know for how long. I just knew he wouldn't be able to come home. We did not have a kid at the time. Thank God. So he left, he packed his bags, he boarded up the windows before he left. And at this time, the weather had already begun to change. And I didn't really have time to leave because I, at the time, had 8 animals.
Oh, wow.
And my father-in-law, which is really up there in age, lives in a camper kind of in front of our house. Didn't want to leave him. And I was just like, my YouTube house is about to endure a historical hurricane. And I'm about to be in here in this YouTube house. So my dad, being the amazing dad that he is, said, I'm going to purposely come and hang out in this hurricane with you.
And oh, so, that's so yeah. sweet.
So he drove down from Marble Falls and I'm like, are you sure? And he's like, let's do this. And he's a diabetic. So I'm like, oh my gosh, if we lose power, like what in the world are we gonna do? Came, he showed up, and being out in the country, you usually are off a co-op for an electric company. They shut our electricity down prematurely before the hurricane even hit, you know, and I totally get it. It was trying to prevent as much damage as possible. possible. So our electricity went out at 12 o'clock that day. And the hurricane, I want to say it started to blow in about 3 o'clock. Victoria was one of the cities that was in the heart of it. Rockport met the eye of the hurricane. And we're not very far from Rockport. So Hurricane Harvey really all gave us a really great tight hug. Like, we were really in it together. And I remember that my cat decided to run out right before it
rained. Oh, no.
At the time, I had a wildlife building being built right next to our house, which was a gift from the community. And I was really worried about it. It was horrible. We couldn't sleep. I mean, the winds got up to about 150 miles per hour. The house was shaking. I just remember praying, man, this is awful, you know, and you just minute by minute. And then I heard my cat meowing frantically. It's so like a dummy. I ran out in the hurricane. And I remember stepping outside, Ashley, in this 140 mile per hour wind. And oh my goodness, what I saw. I saw my wildlife building blowing away. Everything was just coming down around me. Our property was beginning to flood. And I remember just running outside and looking under the house, because our house is on a pier and beam. It's not on a concrete foundation. And there was my cat, and she was up to her neck in water. And I remember just crawling under the house, grabbing her and bringing her in, which I regretted later, because then I was wet. We had no electricity. So when you live out in the country, for the listeners that don't know, your water and electric are tied together. So your electricity pumps your water. So we had no electricity, no water. I didn't have a way to clean off or anything. The dogs couldn't go outside. So the dogs, you know, are having to use the restroom in the house. It was a nightmare. Like,
it was. Wow. Yeah. That's all the things I didn't even think about.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It was just a nightmare. And the morning came, and I remember looking outside, because we didn't have electricity. So we had to wait for the sun to come up. The livestock, which are not ours, rent our land out. The livestock were knee deep in water. They had moved to higher ground on our acreage. The water was halfway up to our vehicles. Our land took on about 5 feet of water. I did not expect that. I did not think about that. Our soil is the black gumbo soil, so it holds water very well. And the water kept coming. So I immediately called my husband and I told him, I think our house is about to take on water. We have to get out of here. Him and a few other police officers showed up. My husband stripped down to hit. He had a change in the middle of our farm market road and hit barefoot. And just to get to us, they couldn't drive their vehicles in. And we quickly had to pack some bags. We had to load up all of our animals. I had to leave my two cats and parrot behind. I remember just throwing a bunch of cat food down on our kitchen table and hoping that was going to last enough days. And the rescue that I was a part of at that time for a long time, Wags Hope and Healing, agreed to watch two of my dogs for me. And they actually met us in Bastrop with potato soup, I believe it was, and cornbread.
Oh, how sweet.
Yeah. But before we got there, we had to go through Cuero. The reality of the damage, it was just mind blowing. Once we were driving down the road, just houses and just debris, everything from our shop that we owned was just strewn across our road. Everything we owned, we lost so much. Our house was leaking, you know. And so anyway, my dad and I are in his car. We managed to get one of our vehicles out. And then my father-in-law has a huge truck, so he followed us out. When we got to Cuero, you couldn't see it, but there was about 6-7 feet of water. It was still really kind of dark outside. And so you couldn't really tell that it was flooded. There was a lot of deputies out on the road. And so we were just driving. Well, we saw this car floating in water, and you couldn't tell where it stopped and started. So here we are, we're just driving, and we hear the deputies start yelling at us, stop, stop. And at that time, we had just come to the edge of it, and we were halfway into that water. And he's yelling at us, put it in reverse, back up, back up. We're about to be washed away. He's yelling at us, back up, back up. My dad's trying to get traction. Well, at that time, my father-in-law, going about 50, did not see us and slammed into the back of our car. could this go any worse? Which pushed us into the water. Luckily, by the grace of God, how it just happened all at once, my dad was able to get enough traction to at least back us up about 2 feet, which kept us from going with the current, and we were able to get out. Both of our cars were damaged really bad. We were okay to drive. We were kind of dragging a fender.
Oh my goodness.
But we got to Bastrop. They took two of our dogs, and I went to Marble Falls and stayed at the La Quinta with three of my dogs. And I had a dove that I was rehabbing at the time. So La Quinta, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I was there for 3 days. I couldn't just sit there. So I contacted some people in Marble Falls. They worked with me and just kind of led a donation site there in Marble Falls for 3 days to take back to Victoria. They allowed my husband 4 hours to come and get me. And there we lived the next 7 days with no water, no electricity. Wags Hope and Healing came down and I arranged for sort of emergency water rescue. For the next 4 days, we rescued over 150 dogs from our floodwaters.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was crazy times. We just did what we could. I mean, we were waist deep in water, pulling chickens out of the water. There was a trailer that was about to be washed away. I'm telling you, this is all God. I had some friends that had an airboat. And so I'm like, bring your airboat. So we're on this airboat and we were just pulling dogs out of houses and through windows. And we were helping people. And it was just, it was incredible to see us all come together and just make a difference where a difference can be made. So yeah, it was an experience. My YouTube house, it stood up. The only reason our house flooded is on our ridge caps. We didn't put on the correct size of ridge cap. It didn't really keep the water from blowing up. The only thing we had to replace was our floors. I lost my entire wildlife building. That was not cool, but anyway, yeah. We survived better for it.
That's amazing. I love that story. That's such a perfect story right now, too. It's just a story of hope.
Yes, for COVID-19. Absolutely. You know, what I think is so beautiful, I mean, there's nothing beautiful about our disaster or a pandemic, but if we could just have a moment to find beauty in it, it's the way that we choose to love each other. In these moments, all the differences that separate us or divide us become blurred and turns into like this bridge. And we just all come together on it. And none of that stuff matters. It's beautiful because we build relationships. And it's just a way for us to see that we can love each other and that we are very capable of it. It's just refreshing. It's just a reminder that we all have the same problems. We're really not different from one another. We're really not. We're just reminded that we're in it together. And that's the beauty in it. We become better for it.
Absolutely. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Toya, I love just your background and your story with you and Jason, and you have this beautiful little boy. Would you mind telling your story, your adoption story?
Yes. So this is honestly my most favorite story of my 34 years is my adoption story. And this story, there's so much depth and meat to it. So I'm going to try and only share the highlights of it because I could seriously speak a 300 page book if I had all the time in the world. I struggled with infertility for 10 years. And so from a very young age, I was told that it might be hard for me to conceive. It was just really spoken over me. It's going to be hard for you to have children. Jason and I, having children wasn't a deal breaker. It wasn't until I turned about 23 years old. I guess it's because I saw my other friends, you know, getting pregnant and having children. And it was just beautiful to see the family dynamic change and this just little bundle of joy and love come in that they created together. And I had a heart change, but I knew that it was going to be hard for me. And so I went to my doctor. Jason was there with me at every appointment. I just told him, you know, I'm just having a lot of issues. This is my past. And I had a laparoscopy and a hysteroscopy, which is procedures that are usually done to diagnose a multitude of things. But for me, it was to diagnose endometriosis, which is a real disease. And it's actually a disease that's really not researched or explored as deeply as it should. I was 23 and my doctor came back and he said, "You have one of the most severe cases of endometriosis that I've ever seen in someone your age." They all said it was true. This isn't going to happen. And so he said, you know, I'd really start to try and conceive within a year because it's already beginning to attach in areas that might prove it difficult. Also, endometriosis can not just interfere with your ability to conceive, but it can also attack your colon, your liver. It can make someone very sick. It's also puts you at a high risk of cancer. It's a disease that really can wreak havoc. So we went home. We tried for a year and we were not able to conceive. I remember just buying lots of ovulation kits and pregnancy tests and little apps. After that first year, we did an infused ultrasound, lots of procedures done to try to help me conceive, medications being taken, and still I was not able to conceive. And at that time, he said, you know, I think that you should really go to San Antonio and see a specialist. When I went home, I sat on my bed and I just remember God saying, no, I don't want you to see a specialist. It was just clear as day. And I told Jason, I said, I feel like God is telling me not to see a specialist. I just remember telling Jason, God is our specialist. In our story, God is our specialist and I'm not to go forward with this. So we turned down IVF and we just continued to try. And some years into it, we stopped trying and we stopped praying. We were totally fine with not having children. We came to a peace. At that time, I had gotten into mentoring teenagers, and Jason loved working with the teenagers in his job. We felt like we had children of our own, and that God gave us all this time to pour ourselves to being big brothers and big sisters to kids. We were at peace with that. So when you can't have kids, you'll get a lot of phone calls from other people that try to give you kids. You know, have you tried this adoption agency? You get a lot of those phone calls. And we did contact a local adoption agency. We actually went through our home check. We're really far into the process, but God just kept telling me to stop. And I thought, God, you are nuts. Why would you not want us to do this? Why would you not want me to go see a specialist or continue this adoption process with this agency? Why would you not want me to do this? We stopped, and this journey was a 10-year journey. And I remember just telling God, I want a baby shower. I want that experience of my husband sitting next to me in the hospital with a rag on my forehead or whatever you do. And I want, you know, the name of our child outside of the delivery room and balloons and flowers. And I want the crib and the changing table. And, you know, I want all of these things, you know, like I want that too. I want to look at our child and see Jason and I in his or her face. I want to hear the laughs and the giggles. And I just couldn't understand why he kept just telling me to stop. In 2014, we had received a phone call from some dear friends of ours, David and Jennifer. And David and Jennifer were the very first couple to pray over our infertility issue when I was 23. The first couple. He called me. He is a nurse practitioner for a hospital. He called and he said that there is a high school student here with her high school boyfriend. They just had a beautiful baby girl and they are not able to keep her. Would you be interested in adopting? And out of all the adoption phone calls, this one felt like we needed to go. We have turned down every other one, peace in our hearts. I called Jason up. I said, no, you're at work, but we got to go. God is telling me to go. Like for once, God is not saying stop. God is saying go. We got to go. And so we got someone to cover a shift. He came home, packed our bags, and we got on the road. Yeah. And we were so nervous. And it's such a surreal experience. Yeah, we're telling these people, yeah, we're great parents. Can you give us your kid? It's weird and it's nerve-wracking. And
yeah,
there we were in this hospital room and we never got to see the baby. And we're just talking to them and her mother's in the room. And I remember just stopping and looking at her. And we just started to talk to them about God. We just quit making it about ourselves. I remember just looking at her and telling her, you are still a mother by choosing to give up your child. motherhood is all about sacrifice, and you're sacrificing your child. That is motherhood. You're sacrificing your life with this child to do best by it. That's motherhood. I remember her crying, and we hugged. We left the hospital, and they said they will call us the next day. They called us. We stayed at our friend's house. The boyfriend called us and said, y'all sound amazing, but we've decided to give our child to a family member. And I remember hugging Jason and crying. Why would God tell me to move and go? For the next 4 years, we stopped praying. We just accepted it and enjoyed the friendships and the mentorships that we had with these children in our life. 4 years later, the mother of that high school girl said, what are you and Jason doing? And I said, we're getting ready for church. She said, my daughter is asking for you too. And that morning, she gave birth to a baby boy. We said, we'll be there. In 5 minutes, we became parents. It was the same girl 4 years later.
Oh my gosh. I'm crying. That's amazing. That's so beautiful.
Yes. What God did in 2014 was he established a relationship with this high school girl and her mother, because 4 years later, God would use that relationship to give us the child that we were supposed to have. What's beautiful about it is that the high school student in those 4 years, she walked away from her relationship with God. She did some things she wasn't proud of, and she lost her way. When she was delivering David, our child, she told me, I was asking and praying to God to give my child to people that deserve it and could love him so that I can get my life on track and find you again. That was when she had told her mom, I want you to call Toy and Jason. This girl, I can't say her name, this girl since then has rekindled her relationship with God, has gone on to accomplish so much in her life. And it's just beautiful that God restored his relationship with his daughter and gave us our greatest desire. That's the power of God. I knew why God had told me to stop all those years, because he had David Alexander Stone for us. It has just been the greatest testament of my life. I knew that adoption was our story. And since then, we have grown such an interest and a passion for the world of adoption and how that it shouldn't be a second best. It shouldn't be plan B. There are so many children that age out of the system at 18 that have nowhere to go. That is what breaks my heart. They go out into the world with nobody. No family, nobody to call up on a bad day, nobody to love them or root them through college or the milestones of their life. They don't have anybody. And so I just encourage everybody, whether you can have children or not, just to consider giving a child a life. When we see him wake up in the morning with his hair just like everywhere in a mess and just waking up with these demands, it just makes us smile because he can. He can wake up and ask for milk and know that he's going to get it. Or when he's running through the garden and picking all the squash and only eating the stems, he gets to form his own personality. He gets to laugh and smile and experience love. Every child deserves that. And it shouldn't be somebody's plan B.